the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, this is Jason Bond at Stoneville, Mississippi with another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Today I have the brain trust of entomology in row crops in Mississippi. Angus Ketchot is over from Starkville. And then, of course, we got Jeff Gore and Don Cook, and then also Dr. Whitney Crow. I think y'all heard her a couple weeks ago. We only have four slots on our mics, so Whitney's just sitting in and listening to what these guys have to say today. And she could probably have my spot, Angus, because I basically have told you everything I know about entomology, which is we have four entomologists.
Well, you said the brain trust, and so that's why she's here. She's our brain trust.
Oh, I thought that was Don.
Not hardly.
If you're talking about knives or guns, maybe.
All right, so I always feel guilty this time of year because, you know, by this time our stuff's kind of wrapping up a little bit, and, you know, some days I get hot and some days I don't, and then I see Don, and he's just, you know, dripping wet, and I feel guilty. But then he always reminds me that he doesn't often get hot earlier in the year, but it's not as hot in May as it is in July and August, Don. So I commend y'all for what y'all do, but I also don't envy you what you do, but because y'all stay wet and hot a lot. I know y'all got a lot of things going on right now. I've seen you running up and down the road. Angus was here bright and early Monday morning after we were gone for a week. So I know y'all got a lot of stuff breaking loose. So what's going on in the entomology world, Angus?
Well, I think probably what we'll talk about the majority of the time right now is where we're at on this bollworm flight in cotton. We're going to try to, you know, how much time we got here and how it goes, but we're going to talk some, too, about what's going on in soybeans. But really, I would say the lion's share of everything right now, whether we're talking about cotton or soybeans, revolves around bollworms and where we're at and what we need to do. And that's some of the things we're going to talk about. Had a lot of calls this week and last week about the bollworm flight, and we're going to go into a lot more detail today, and that's what we're going to discuss.
Yeah, this seems like one of the weirdest years that we've had from a bollworm flight standpoint.
Dude, it's a weird year, period.
We've always had, the last several years, this kind of trickling of bollworm moths laying eggs in cotton fields and soybean fields and everything else. But we've always had somewhat of a peak in that egg lay. So we'll start off at low egg lay, 4 or 5% for a week to 10 days, and then it'll all of a sudden spike up to 80% eggs and then drop back off to 8, 10%, and it'll hang there for a while. But this year, it's just been fluctuating. We've never had that big peak. It's just been fluctuating 4 to 5%, up to 10 to 12, 20%, 30%, back down to 10%, and it's just never had that peak. And it's making a lot of the decisions very difficult this year in terms of time and sprays.
I have an idea. I don't know if this is it exactly yet, but I think it plays a role. Typically, you know, particularly in the Delta, all our corn is planted, you know, end of March in about a 10 to 14 day period. We have got corn planting strung out over a couple of months. So
that's a fact, Don.
And, you know, we've got moths emerging out of corn continually. So I think that plays a role in this as well.
So that's what I was going to ask Jeff was, do y'all think it's a product of the year, or is there something, you know, new and different going on in those populations? It's common to hear people refer to the weather during the winter and its influence on insect pests during the spring. And I don't know. And then I hear y'all, maybe it applies to some, but not to all.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the weather some and how it affects different insect pests, and some of them are impacted differently. One of the probably greatest examples is red-banded stink bugs. We know after warm winters that they're going to be, and they're picking up now some. But bollworms are a little different. You know, it's probably, you know, I've seen actually higher bollworm counts if you just look at long-term averages between really cold winters. And what the thought there is it kills the parasitoids out for that generation that comes out of overwinter. Now, we're always going to have some level of pest, But one of the things that's going on in a really wet spring is all the wild hosts and the ditch banks, and you name the pest, it really doesn't matter. If the wild hosts are flourishing, that flight can, you can come out of overwintering with something really light, and it can blow up really big in the spring. So this year, I would say we probably got ordinary bollworm numbers, but like they said, it's spread out probably due to planting dates of corn. Something else that's going on that's a little unusual is approximately 70% of our soybeans are planted after May 15th this year. So for the first time in a long time, peak bloom of cotton is lining up with a tremendous amount of R2, R3 beans, and it's diluting that population out across a lot of acres, because in some cases they're preferentially going to soybeans, but it's making that cotton flight more of a trickle. And like Jeff said earlier, it is making people crazy trying to deal with this. That, you know, what we really want, we want these big flights where you walk into a field and the decision's easy. The decision's not easy right now.
And so that's what I was going to ask. You know, Jeff was talking about this kind of continual lower level infestation compared with the spikes that you would ordinarily expect. So how do you adjust your management to account for that, you know, different from a more typical year? No typical years, but, you know, in recent years, I guess.
Well, I'd say what's causing the problem right now is, of course, we've enacted an egg threshold a couple years ago. So it's 20% infested plants with eggs out of 100. So that's been really good to us. But with these low numbers of eggs that are coming in and the high survival now of Bolgar 2, what's going on, and this is what's making everybody crazy, and me included, is you'll get 4 or 5, let's just say you get 7 or 8% egg lay. It's not enough to trigger the egg threshold, but then you come back in 5 days and you got 4% worms. Well, that's what's making people, you know, these management decisions extremely difficult, because that 4% worms is also our worm threshold.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. What was the threshold for worms?
It's 4%, but the problem there is now they're under bloom tags, and when we do make those sprays, even with the best products out there, such as like Prevathon or Besiege, we're not getting great control, and it's a repeat of what we saw late 16 and 17. So it's not that we're not being timely, it's just the way the flight's going is that's what's dictating when we spray, and they're just hard to get out of there, and we know that.
Yeah, and I think one thing that we have to think about too is it's in this situation you really have to kind of basically manage expectations of what you expect to have and realize the fact that there's going to be times when we get a few worms coming through in cotton, whether it's low numbers through Bolgar 2 cotton or Bolgar 3 cotton before a spray or after a spray or whatever. And I think especially in a year like this, we just have to accept the fact that we're going to see a few worms in cotton this year, regardless of what we do. And, you know, nobody's going to be happy about it, but I think people need to keep in mind that a lot of times some of these low numbers that we see coming through, you hate to see it, but really and truly, in a lot of situations, they're not going to be economical.
Yeah, and that's what you got to keep in mind. And you got, when you're looking at these low numbers, you got to ask yourself, is it going to pay to try to control these?
I certainly was going to mention that, Don, because you got obviously some expensive treatments, you know, that are options out there. And then if you're getting poor control of a low level infestation, you know, it's going to be a kind of a hard sell for the guy that's writing the checks, for sure.
Well, I think with those diamides, it's hard to really sometimes determine what is poor control, because I think what we're dealing with right now is we're seeing a lot of worms coming through real low in the canopy where we can't get insecticide to. But as those worms move up in a lot of situations, you know, if it's 4 to 5 days after a spray, we can't afford to be spraying diamides every 4 to 5 days, and you just have to hope that those worms are going to move up to plant where we got the insecticide out there and get some control, you know, at that time.
And what's complicating this to some degree, it's a good thing and a bad thing, it's a catch-22, is honestly, and we talked about this a little bit before we started, if you look at the state as a whole, particularly the Delta right now, we're dealing with some of the lightest plant bugs on average, and I always say on average, but on average, this is one of the extremely light plant bug years. So ordinarily, you get these low egg lays, And although we don't recommend pyrethroids anymore for bollworms, that pyrethroid acephate mixture is really good on plant bugs, and it will knock them back some. It just don't hold. It breaks really fast, and sometimes those numbers blow up even higher than if you, you know, if you didn't spray at all. But it will knock them back. But the fact that we're not making those regular plant bug applications, we're not getting any help from, you know, that, that mixture that we'd ordinarily be applying on plant bugs. And it's just, I'm telling you, I got people right now just cussing today that they planted cotton from a, you know, just from a standpoint of it's so hard and they're spending so much time in these fields. And it is, I can understand the frustration. It's extremely difficult right now. And it is field by field. We got some fields where people are worried that they're missing them because their neighbors are spraying. And they're probably not missing them. I mean, these guys have been doing this for a long time. But it makes you nervous when the neighbors are spraying and you're not. But that's the situation this year.
Yeah. So what do you think the influence on the plant bugs is? Cause, I mean, that's kind of been a scourge.
Yeah, I mentioned that all the rain we've had this year and those wild hosts, you know, plant bugs would rather be in some broadleaf weed, whatever it is, you name it, flower, and then they would be in cotton. And with the rains we've had, we've kept – I mean, the plant bugs are in the ditches. They're here, and I'm seeing them at, you know, April, May numbers, normal levels. But with all the rains and just the really good wild host plants, I mean, we may see a big flush next week. I don't know.
We get a big dry spell and they start drying down. You could see a big movement into cotton.
There's a lot in all these late planted beans, too. I mean, they're just scattered out across a lot of different places right now.
One of y'all mentioned this earlier. I can't remember if it was Don or Jeff. But this year, you know, I've been looking in and around cotton for a year, and every year is different, but this is the most unique year I have ever seen. I mean, it is just, it's all over the board. We got crazy stuff going on all over, different ages of stuff in the same field, and we're dealing with that, and this is an extremely odd year, and unfortunately, we're going to have some field-by-field calls, but it makes it tough.
Guys, on the bollworms, I hate to keep coming back to this, but a question I thought of, the way that trait works in the plant, you know, discouraging, for lack of a better word, the bollworm feeding, you know, if that was a weed and we just had a continual low-level infestation, we would worry about selection pressure toward, you know, resistant populations. How does that work, an insect trait in a plant? You know, if you've got continual numbers out there, and they're below the threshold or right at the threshold, and then you may, you know, get, if you do make a treatment, you may get less than acceptable control, or the situation that Jeff described a minute ago. How does that influence a shift in the ball towards resistance, if that's even possible?
Well, I think there's really two answers to your question, because we're talking about two different things. We could be talking about resistance to the trait.
Right.
Or to the chemical that we're spraying.
And I guess I lean more, the question I had in my mind was more toward the trait side than the treatment side. I have a better understanding of how resistance to a, you know, an applied treatment works rather than a resistance to a trait.
And so it's obviously a little bit different than when you're talking about the trait versus a spray. Because with a spray, you spray a high selective dose out there, and that dose gradually declines over time of the selection pressure that it's exerting on the population. With a trait, we don't see that. The trait efficacy declines a little bit over time, but it never goes to zero. So we have a constant selection pressure out there all year.
Okay.
And the complicating factor with BT is that we have that selection pressure in two different crops that's continuous throughout the life of that crop. And in the case of bollworms with corn and cotton, we're selecting two, sometimes three generations throughout the season, really probably more than that. We're probably selecting one to two generations in corn, and then potentially another one to two, maybe even three generations in cotton. And so we have that continuous selection pressure throughout the year. And so really and truly, I think you were asking about the low levels. I don't think that has, when you're talking about selection pressure from that standpoint, I don't think it matters if you're talking about low-level populations or high-level.
Okay.
That selection pressure is going to be the same because it is out there constantly.
And we already have some level of resistance in populations to certain of the traits already.
Yeah.
So which ones are those, Don?
It's for in the like the two gene, like the Bogard 2, the twin leak wide strike. When we talk about traits, we talk about cry traits and then VIP traits. The cry traits are the ones that, I mean, we have some resistance. It's not absolute, but that's like the reason we went to the egg threshold on the Bogard 2. The levels and survival is enough that we're getting enough larvae coming through. We're getting enough damage that it's it's economically justified to treat. So that's where the resistance is at right now. The three gene stuff is right now seems to be holding for the most part.
Three gene, you mean like Bogard 3?
Bogard 3, Twin Link Plus, okay. Things like that.
Well, here's a question, and I should know this, I guess, but cotton acre wise, what percent is Bogard 2 versus Bogard 3?
The lion's share of it for now is still in Bogard 2.
Okay, that's what I would have guessed, yeah, but I wasn't sure.
The varieties in Bogard 2, the performance of them are so much higher, but it ain't going to be long. We're going to be in a full Bogard 3, Wide Strike 3, Twin Link Plus world. But as long as some of the Bogard 2s agronomically perform and they're available, you know, we're going to go with what the producers are going to choose the highest yield, and we'll have to manage it from there.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff we've been talking about to this point has been related to either Bogard 2 or Twin Link or Wide Strike, the two-gene cottons, and we really haven't even touched on any of the three-gene stuff yet.
Yeah, so before we get into the three-gene, I just want to mention this because I've been asked this a couple times, and I think most consultants and retailers and industry people, you know, for the most part understand this. But the likelihood, you know, Don was talking about we have resistance to the cry genes, the Bogard, you know, the cry 1, you know, AC and 2AB. We have resistance. That's pretty well documented now. The likelihood of survival of worms in those technologies now is extremely high. I mean, we see a lot of survival. Although it's, again, it does still offer a little bit. The likelihood is really high. That's the whole purpose of the egg threshold. Now, the question as we start moving into the VIP cottons now, the Bogard 3s and Wide Strike 3s and so forth, the question now is how do you manage the two things differently? And that's kind of where we're at right now, because there is enough of it spread around out there, you know, across Mississippi that people have some, or a lot of people do, planted. And how do you manage the two things differently? And it's getting pretty complicated with all these technologies out there, but we are actually recommending different strategies right now, and we'll get into this a little more depth, but we're recommending, you know, the egg threshold in the Bogard 2s, the Bogard 3s, Wide Strike 3s, we're still recommending the 4% live worm or 6% fruit damage. Now, we have sprayed a couple Bogard 3 and Wide Strike 3 fields this year. It's certainly not out of control. We've had a lot of people let eggs go, and it's worked out just fine for them. But for now, we're still sticking the best we can, and this may change in the near future, but we're still sticking to those larval and damage thresholds in those VIP cottons.
Okay, you alluded to some different strategies, tactics. What else are you referring to, Angus, with the exception of the worm threshold and the Bogard 3? You know, what else are we talking about?
Well, we just mean if we start seeing live worms, if they exceed 4% or the fruit damage exceeds 6% in the VIP cottons, that's when we're going to recommend coming in and spraying those, not on eggs. Now, keep in mind, and this is good to remember, those same larval and damage thresholds also apply to Bogard 2. So if you missed the eggs, if you didn't ever hit the 20% eggs, but now you're at 4% live worms or 6% damage, that's you've actually hit threshold there, and so we're treating on worms instead of eggs now.
Yeah, I think that Angus's wording of tactics was a little off. He didn't mean tactics. He just meant our thresholds are different on the different technologies.
You just got smacked, dude.
We're using the same tactics, which is going to be foliar sprays,
okay,
with the diamides, essentially.
Changing your trigger points.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to smack him, but
yeah, well,
that's not what he meant by tactics.
I need to be smacked sometimes. I like it. That's the only way you grow. You got to get smacked out.
That's what Whitney's here for.
So, yeah. You know, all the corn that we have, you know, it's starting to dry down. What influences can we expect on our, you know, insect management and in the other crops, mainly, you know, mainly cotton and soybeans?
Well, I mean, we're getting the larvae that developed in that corn, they pupated and the adults are emerging, and that's what we're talking about.
So we've already got
They're trickling, well, anywhere from flooding to trickling out of that. And with, you know, like I mentioned earlier, a more normal year, corn's planted in a much shorter window, you get a more of a bunch come out at once. Right now with this corn planted all over the place, you got them coming out all the time. This leading to this trickle effect that Angus is talking about, where you're getting them. And I fully expect this to last for a while as well, instead of being, you know, over a really relatively short period of time, a bunch come out, then it just get down to low numbers. I got a feeling that this is going to last for a while.
Yeah, and it's not just going to be corn. I mean, we're hearing about a lot of bollworms in beans, a lot of sprays going out in beans. But there are a lot of fields, too, that it's just one or two bollworms every now and then in sweeps, and we've got, what, 2 million acres of soybeans out there. There's a lot of those soybeans that aren't getting sprayed, and we're going to have populations coming from there as well.
Well, one of my guys was asking me this morning, he said he was, you know, picking up some bollworms in his soybeans. Y'all trained him, Reed Kelly, and I was like, dude, you know, that's what I got you for. I wouldn't know a bollworm in a soybean if I saw it. So,
well, if he's coming to you asking questions about insects, we didn't do a very good job with him.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but that's kind of what I thought. But I think if we're noticing them in our weed control plots with the amount of pigweeds and stuff we got out there, then you know, it's probably garnering some attention. What's the difference in the strategy for managing bollworms in beans relative to cotton?
Well, I think this might be a pretty good lead-in, because I was about to say one of the things I think we definitely need to talk about, because I've had this conversation so many times this year, is rates. And that'll be an obvious difference in soybeans versus cotton, but even within cotton. And if we're talking exclusively about, let's say, Basige and Prevathon, that's the two diamides that are being used. So the questions we're getting, especially, you know, with the price of cotton right now, we have been supporting the higher use rates on the label. So that'd be essentially 20 ounces of Prevathon or 10 ounces of Basige. And I understand the economics, and I understand why people would be inclined to spray less. But if you look at the wealth of data from Arkansas and Mississippi, the reason that we are trying to keep people on that higher end of that rate scale, at least for the first application, is from purely a consistency standpoint. We have seen more consistent results using a higher rate. I mean, and obviously, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And I won't say that if you're using 7 ounces of Basige or 14 ounces of Prevathon that you're going to have a control failure. That's not at all true. But it is really, you have got to be on your A game, and you've got to be perfect to make that work. And even if the consultant's perfect, if there's a 2-day delay and when that application actually goes out, that extra higher rate could make a big difference. Yeah, yeah. It can make a big difference, and we can show this pretty clearly. So when people say, man, you're costing me this much more money by making this recommendation, there's a reason for that. And I mean, I had this call yesterday. The application went out 4 days after after it was called. The guy was on time with it, but 4 days later, now they're under bloom tags and they didn't do a good job. So that, you know, that's a lot of our reasoning behind us recommending that higher rate. Yeah, if you're perfect. But we're not in a perfect world, and that definitely covers up a lot of those things that nobody can help. It makes a big difference from a consistency standpoint.
And the thing about cotton from the consistency standpoint is worms have always been much, much more difficult to control in cotton than they are in beans. And so that's why we recommend a higher rate in the cotton. To answer your question about beans, we have a lot more options in beans. The diamides are still a very good option. We can use a little bit lower rates in beans than we do in cotton. But we also have some other products available. Intrepid Edge is a really good option in beans. Not that it's a bad option in cotton, but it generally doesn't fit as well as the diamides do in cotton. And then another one that's out there that's even cheaper is Helogen, the virus that's going out a lot on a lot of acres right now. But the big difference between cotton and soybeans is we have a lot of really good options in soybeans. and cotton is pretty much the diamide.
You know, kind of the one thing that I want to mention, I want to reiterate something that Jeff said earlier, just kind of in closing, and see if they might have some more comments. I think this year, more than any, we're going to see, like he mentioned earlier, we're going to see some damage, you know, in this Bogart 2 cotton and possibly even in the Bogart 3 cotton because of the way the flight is going. You just can't keep spraying 2-3% eggs, and that 2-3% eggs seems to be turning into 2-3% worms. So we're going to be chasing worms some, which is not ideal, but there's no way to avoid it. And just remember, like he said perfectly a while ago, just because you can walk down every 4 or 5 foot and find a damaged boll, that does not mean at all that it's economically feasible to spray or you've lost your grower money, because the likelihood is you did not. You didn't. Just a few damaged bolls here and there is probably not going to make a difference. I know it's hard to look at, but at the same time, it's something that we can tolerate and may have not been justified to spray anyway. But it's got a lot of people on edge.
You know, I'll add to that, you know, another thing just kind of wrapping up is going back to the 3-gene cotton is, you know, this week we've heard about a lot of worms surviving in Bogart 3, particularly some in Wide Strike 3. And Angus has mentioned we've already sprayed a couple fields. Well, Don and Angus and Whitney and I went and looked at a couple of fields yesterday up around Clarksdale. It's Bogart 3. The consultants were finding consistently fairly high numbers of 1 to 2 day old larvae in pink blooms. We went back yesterday, couldn't hardly find larvae in those fields, you know, just 1 or 2 days later. And I think the key is with these 3-genes is we don't need to be too quick with the trigger. You know, usually when they're in those pink blooms and under those bloom tags, that boll is gone. I mean, they're generally going to hit it. Now, we didn't see a lot of really any damage.
I think we saw yesterday. One, maybe two.
Yeah, one or two damaged small bolls. But, I mean, my message would be on those 3-genes right now is just don't panic. You're going to see some worms surviving. The likelihood of them going on developing into big larvae is fairly low. And we still may end up seeing, just like Angus was talking about, that a boll every now and then that gets damaged, there's going to be some that survive and get through it. But, you know, right now I don't think where we are, we don't need to be spraying the 3-genes as much as we are the 2-genes.
Well, I mean, with the current situation that we've seen, I don't see how we can afford to start spraying 3-gene cotton a lot.
Yeah. And that may change.
Absolutely.
In the near future, as things develop, I mean, we're already seeing some things in the VIP corn that we haven't seen in the past. We've made some collections out of VIP corn this year in Mississippi. So it can change fast, but for right now, I think we're still in good shape.
So I'd say just stay plugged in. I promise y'all, if we need to make a change, we'll make it, and we will get the word out through podcasts, newsletters, every avenue we can. But right now, we feel still pretty good about where we're at least on thresholds. But it could change fast, and just stay tuned. I promise we'll get it out.
Yeah, and we're always talking to all our colleagues around the Mid-South. So if they're hearing things, we'll get it out to y'all as well.
If y'all need me for any entomology news, just call me, and I'll give you Angus or Jeff, or I'll give you Whitney's phone number.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we'll deal with that, because I will be next to no help for you. So, but anyway. Seriously, these guys are on top of everything, and I know that as the situation evolves, they will have the best possible information available to help us finish out the year and make a crop.
And I'll say, don't underestimate yourself. You did a great job leading in with questions and comments today.
Yeah, I showed you everything I didn't know.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.